Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Feels like in Colorado, justice seems to move in circles. The kind of circles that start with a missing wife, a frantic husband, a headline that fades into dust, and then years later, surprise, comes roaring back to life with a new arrest, a new prosecutor, and a body found in the dirt. Barry Morphew has been here before. He was charged once in 2021 with killing his wife, Suzanne. The case collapsed. The evidence was thin, the prosecution sloppy, and the defense walked him out of that courtroom with his head high. He sued the government afterwards for $15 million, claiming they'd ruined his life. And for a while, it looked like that was the end of it. But now, it is all back. The charges, the headlines, the same marriage under a microscope. Only this time, the state says the difference is science. The body of Suzanne Morphew has been found. And inside those bones lies the evidence they say tells the real story, the one Barry can't talk his way out of, according to them. For those who followed the case from the start, it began on Mother's Day weekend of 2020. Suzanne was 50, active, kind, a mother of two grown daughters, and by all accounts, restless. She'd been unhappy in her marriage for a long time. She'd reconnected with an old flame, sent him romantic messages, maybe even planned to leave Barry. He, meanwhile, was trying to hold together what was left of their family image. He told friends they were working on it. But beneath the surface, something was cracking. When she disappeared, Barry told police he'd gone to work early that morning in Broomfield, 3 hours away, leaving Suzanne asleep at home. He said she must have gone for a bike ride and never came back. Search teams flooded the area. Her bike was found thrown down an embankment. The helmet a mile away, but no sign of Suzanne. It didn't take long before the story started to smell wrong. Her phone was found off. Barry's truck data didn't match the timeline he gave police. And investigators said they found evidence that looked like cleanup. Trash runs, movements at odd hours, phone activity that didn't add up. The whole story, the bike ride, the work trip, the concerned husband, it began to collapse, and by 2021, prosecutors had enough to indict him for first-degree murder, even without a body. It was a bold move at the time, maybe too bold. The district attorney at the time, Linda Stanley, was aggressive, but also reckless. She filed massive amounts of discovery quite late. She withheld evidence and turned the case into a procedural mess. The judge, because of the massive mess that she had created, threw it all out, furious at the state's incompetence. People were disbarred. Barry walked free. And Stanley, like I said, eventually disbarred. That's why process matters. Fast forward to September of 2023. Hunters in San Luis Valley stumbled across human remains in a remote mountainous area miles from where Suzanne was last seen. And it was Suzanne, the woman at the center of one of Colorado's most haunting mysteries, had been found. And for investigators, it was like finding the missing piece of a nightmare puzzle. They sent the bones to the state lab for analysis, hoping to answer the question that haunted everyone for years. What actually happened to Suzanne Morphew? The answer, according to prosecutors, was in chemistry. Toxicology tests showed a mixture of drugs in her system and one called BAM. Now, forgive me here. I'm not great at enunciating prescription drug type names. It was a mixture of, we'll go for it here, brutotafol, azapirone, and metidentamine. I'm sure I'm saying those wrong. BAM. It's easier to say BAM, isn't it? BAM. So whatever those are, all into one. What it is a potent combination used to tranquilize wildlife. You don't find that in suburban medicine cabinets or on the walls or the shelves of Walgreens. It's not in antidepressants. It's not in painkillers. Not in anything the average person would have access to. But Barry Morphew, he did. He was one of the only private citizens in the region authorized to use or possess BAM, allegedly. He was a licensed deer hunter, someone who used tranquilizers to manage or immobilize animals. To the state, it was their link, the forensic proof that this wasn't just a missing persons case, but a homicide committed by someone who knew exactly what they were doing. And it does not look very good now, does it, to have a tranquilizer this specific in the bones of your deceased wife, and you happen to be the only one that allegedly has access to said drug? Maybe it can be explained. Maybe it can't. I don't know. In June of 25, this last June, a grand jury in Colorado's 12th Judicial District indicted him again for first-degree murder. Same charge, different case, new DA, new courtroom, and new evidence. And that's where things stand right now. Barry Morphew facing the same accusation that nearly ruined him the first time. But now armed with both his own survival story and a defense team ready to rip apart every inch of this new case. Prosecutors are calling this justice finally catching up. The defense calls it revenge in a lab coat. From the prosecutor's side, the story is built like a scientific thriller. They say Suzanne was injected with the tranquilizer, subdued, and later killed. They say her body was moved maybe more than once before ending up in that shallow grave. They claim Barry's phone went off during crucial hours the weekend she disappeared. And his truck? Well, the telemetry showed suspicious activity and that his movements in Broomfield, where he was supposedly working, looked more like a man disposing of evidence than pouring concrete. They'll tell the jury this was a marriage disintegrating from the inside out. Suzanne had fallen in love with another man. She was ready to leave. Barry knew it, and instead of letting her go, he decided no one else would have her. They'll call it control, rage, maybe even a twisted sense of ownership disguised as heartbreak. But if the state's case sounds clean on paper, the defense will make it dirty fast. They've been down this road before, and they know exactly where to dig. They'll say the BAM evidence isn't the smoking gun the prosecution wants it to be. Traces of the tranquilizer found in bones after years of decomposition. That's not precision science. That's forensic interpretation. And interpretation can be wrong. They'll question whether the samples were contaminated, whether the chemical could have leached in post-mortem from animal activity or even soil exposure. Maybe there was another animal out there that found the body that had that in them. Could that transfer in some way, shape, or form? These are things they're going to dig into and try and find answers and present facts. They'll point out that there's still no murder weapon, no cause of death, and no direct evidence tying Barry to the act of killing. No eyewitness, no confession, no body scene, or no bloody scene. They'll bring up the old DNA again, the male profile found in Suzanne's Range Rover glove box that didn't match Barry. Investigators once claimed it was irrelevant. The defense will call it proof of tunnel vision. And above all, they'll remind everyone the last time the state tried this, it blew up spectacularly. That Barry spent years living under suspicion, watched his business collapse, his name dragged through national headlines, and his daughters forced to choose between loyalty and disbelief. Because if you want to understand the story, you can't ignore the human wreckage around it. Two daughters, Macy and Mallory, who have stood by their father from day one. They were young women when their mother vanished, old enough to remember her, but too young to make sense of what came next. They were thrust into a world where their family became the evening news, where their mother's name was always followed by the word missing, and their father's by suspect. They've said they still love him, still believe in his innocence, but imagine what that does to a person to live suspended between grief and doubt. To need answers and to be terrified of what those answers might be. Similar to probably what the Adelson children are going through, Wendy's kids, trying to make sense of their family. Suzanne's death became a symbol of marital tragedy, but her daughter's pain is the real haunting. They've had to navigate birthdays, holidays, and graduations under the shadow of question of the public, of everyone. The entire country thinks it has the right answer. Did your dad kill your mom? And people think they know the answer one way or the other. And what about Barry himself? Whatever anyone believes, it's undeniable that he has been through psychological war. The first arrest destroyed him publicly. The civil lawsuit failed. But it gave him a voice, a platform to claim victimhood. He spent years portraying himself as the wrongly accused man, hounded by overzealous prosecutors, betrayed by a system that wanted a villain more than it wanted truth. That mindset of persecution, of the me against the world, is powerful. And now, as he faces trial again, he's more confident, more combative, and more convinced than ever that he's the one who's been wronged. But is he? Confidence and innocence aren't the same thing. The truth may live somewhere between the state's certainty and the defense's denial, but the case isn't clean. It never was. There are moments that scream guilt. His phone off during the window Suzanne vanished, the deleted text, the unexplainable movements, the staged bike scene allegedly, and there are moments that raise doubt. Watched investigations, prosecutorial misconduct, and the ugly reality that sometimes innocent people get crushed by incompetent systems. It is a psychological maze, not just for the jury, but for everyone watching. The public has grown cynical. We've seen too many cases built on circumstantial towers that collapse under cross-examination. And yet, when you look at the sheer accumulation of inconsistencies, the timing, the chemical link, the life unraveling behind closed doors, it's hard to shake the sense that something dark happened in that house. Barry's defense will rely on emotion, not science. They'll try to make the jury feel the pain of the man who lost his wife and then lost his reputation. They'll remind him that beyond a reasonable doubt is a scared phrase, not a suggestion. That unless the state can prove exactly how, where, and when the murder happened, they can't convict. The prosecution will try to do the opposite. They'll turn this into a lesson in control and possession and psychology of a man who couldn't stand to lose what he thought was his. They'll paint Barry as someone who needed to dominate the narrative even after death, someone who thought staging a bike accident and erasing data would erase his guilt. And in between those two stories, the loving father and the calculating killer, is a truth of Suzanne Morphew. She wasn't just a missing person, she was a woman trapped in a marriage that had stopped feeling like home. She was looking for connection, for escape, for air, and she never got it. The last text she sent before she vanished read like something out of a quiet cry for help, part exhaustion, part surrender. When people talk about cases like this, they love the forensic side, the science, the data, the twist. But at the core of all of it was a relationship, two people bound by years of shared history, resentment, guilt, and the hollow hope that love can fix what's already broken. When you strip away the courtroom drama, what's left is human nature. The way control disguises itself as devotion. The way anger turns to violence when love becomes rejection. That's where the psychology lives. For Suzanne, it may have been the desire to be free. For Barry, it may have been the terror of being left behind. Those two emotions, freedom and fear, have destroyed more marriages than any weapon ever could. The law will try to decide whose emotion crossed the line into murder. What's next is months of pretrial wrangling, arguments over what evidence can be shown, which experts can testify, and whether the jury can fairly hear a case that's already played out once before in public opinion. The trial itself is likely to happen in the summer of 2026. We'll see, though, with the judge already warning both sides, no more delays and no more games. But no matter how it ends, there's no version of this story where anyone wins. Suzanne is gone. Her daughters will spend the rest of their lives being asked to explain their parents. And Barry Morphew, whether guilty or not, will never be free of this narrative. He's been tried once by the court of law and forever by the court of public opinion. Justice here isn't about punishment anymore. It's about belief. Do you believe the science, the data, the story the state is telling, or do you believe in the man's innocence and his insistence of it, that he's the target of a justice system that can't admit it got it wrong the first time? We have seen this before in other cases. Maybe the truth is just simpler. Maybe it's not about science or motive or marriage. Maybe it's about a moment. A man standing in his kitchen, realizing his life is falling apart and making a choice he can never undo. Or maybe it's about a system that decided long ago who the villain should be and just kept trying to prove it. That's what makes this case so haunting. It's not just about what happened to Suzanne Morphew. It's about what happens when truth and narrative collide. Because in the end, there are two kinds of stories in true crime, the ones where the evidence tells the story and the ones where the story tells the evidence. And the Barry Morphew case might just be both. Until the jury speaks, everything is speculation dressed as justice. And in that silence between what we know and what we want to believe, the real tragedy of the story continues to unfold, not just in court, but in the hearts of everyone still waiting for the truth to sound like the truth. What do you think? Did he do it? Did he not? Is the state being overzealous because it failed miserably the first time? Or is it something in between? Tell me in the comments section. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Not just he's guilty or he's innocent, but why? Why do you think that? Let's hear your argument. YouTube is where you can leave that comment. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you're not already there, you'll find us. Hit subscribe, and then you can join in our conversations about all the cases we follow for you right here. If you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, thank you. Please hit subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case. We'll keep following it all the way through trial. In the summer, if that's where it lands, we will find out. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.